Hi, and welcome to the show.
I'm Firehair.
I'm Sonic Rob.
And this is our podcast. We'll be talking about the latest in gaming, movies, DVDs, and...
whatever, really.
This week, we're talking about the top 5 tips for noobs in Dawn of War 2.
We're going to do a quick discussion about True Blood and Dexter on DVD and why we like them.
We're going to talk about Harry Potter 6 and why I hate it so much and I haven't even seen it.
And I'm going to try and figure out why I would make a shirt to go hang out with nerds in Seattle.
Alright, stick with us. It'll be fun.
Okay, so first up on this week's podcast is our latest obsession, which is Dawn of War 2. It's a Warhammer 40k real-time strategy game that has a lovely, lovely online multiplayer component that is filled with noobs! Bloody, bloody noobs.
Yeah, welcome to the internet, kid. I've been there for a while now. You're welcome to a career of dealing with morons who've just started the awesome thing and don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, so we came up with the top 5 things noobs need to know about Dawn of War 2.
Thing number 1.
Your commander can cap. Seeing someone's force commander sit next to a victory point while we lose by like 1 point as he's sitting there thinking, oh, my commander can't take it because that's how it was in the first Dawn of War? Noob.
Well, you know, and that's one of those weird sort of paradoxes where that's an experienced noob. You know, this isn't some guy who's never played a real-time strategy or never played Dawn of War. Odds are good. This is a person who played Dawn of War 1 or, you know, Dark Crusade or Soulstorm when you couldn't cap with your commander. Now, they're still a noob for sitting there.
Well, I say this because I did this when I was a noob. I tried not to hate on noobs because I was a noob, but now when I play with noobs and I'm no longer a noob, I hate the noobs.
Well, you're trying to help the noob with hate.
I try to help with hate.
Yeah.
So number 2, reviving costs you nothing but time. When my commander is dead and your commander runs by and then sits there waiting for something in like 8 times the time it would take to revive me, he's a butthole.
And you're also missing out on stuff if you don't revive allied commanders. There's achievements for that. There's another, you know, badass dude running around the
map. You also level up your commander. He gets a little more badass. So revive.
There's no excuse.
No
excuse. I mean, you know, not knowing, yeah, but you're missing out on so much. There's so much to gain if you just... and you don't have to sprint all the way across the map to revive an allied commander who's
although,
down.
Mad points to the fool who waded in to melee with his war boss to revive my apothecary yesterday. I love you, man.
Well, that's also, you know, having a live apothecary next to your war boss is way better than no apothecary next to your war boss.
Point number 3, learn when to fight and when to fall back. Now, this is something we're all working on, and it's a delicate balance. But if you fall back the first time one of your guys gets a hangnail, you are a fucking noob.
Yeah, I mean, there are, like you say, that's the process of just learning the game. And frankly, stuff like the upcoming patch may change this, as you find that your shes are tougher or your tacks are weaker. You know, you may find that you have to reconsider, oh wait, you know, I've lost 2 tacks, it's time to go. You know,
it's also that the fallback function, if you haven't played Company of Heroes, you don't know what fallback is and you even have it. So you need to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. I'm sorry to bring Kenny Rogers into it, but that's the way of things.
Yeah, and again, like you say, there are fine sort of points to learning about retreating all over Dawn of War, but you really can at least get a basic sense of, oh no, it's time to leave, or I can win this.
Yeah. Point 4. The team that fights together wins together. Support us! Okay, that's my little chaos of the day. Please give us chaos, Relic! And that's like, in multiplayer in Dawn of War 2, if you're all on your own and you're noobs, you're screwed. A whole bunch of high-level guys can go out and pursue their own strategy, but if you're a low-level guy, you're not really sure what you're doing, pick a guy and just support him.
Like, yeah, just follow...
back his play.
Follow the guy who knows what he's doing.
For real.
If someone says, hey, let's do this, you know, and they can be literally like, yeah, let's do this, that's a good sign. But if it's someone who's like, you know, going to cap the middle VP, go along. There's going to be someone else there.
Yeah. I mean, we've all gone to the point where it's like, oh my god, all 3 of the enemy commanders are here. I cannot stay. be that team. Be the team that goes together and whoops ass.
Yeah, and, you know, mobbing together like that doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn to control multiple units at once. You should have a second unit running around capping and things like that if you can.
Yeah.
If you have skills for that. If you don't, you know, get some skills by following around and watching someone who does.
And better yet, like, tell your teammates, be like, tell me where to go. I'm here to support you. Like, communicate.
Yeah, where to is a great question to hear.
Yeah.
If you're looking at chat down there and someone's like, where do I go? Yeah.
For real.
I love seeing that.
You're like, oh, let's go here. Let's go here. Support me. Support me. Build heavy bolts and devastators. Yay!
Yeah.
So, and point five, this is my pet peeve.
Your pettest peeve.
Pettest peeve. Point control is nothing without the resources to back it up.
Now, point control is important.
Point control is important. You cannot win without point control, but I cannot tell you the number of games that I've played where someone has been so focused on holding a victory point, the other side has gone around, taken all of the resources on the map, and wiped us to nothing.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, you can't keep the points if you can't keep units flowing.
Exactly.
And you're not, your units are not immortal, they're not made of concrete. You're gonna lose guys, you're gonna have to either buy new squads or retreat and replace guys. Either way, you need Wreck
and
Power.
And you have to tech up. If you're holding everything with a bunch of tech marines and he rolls at you with like three dreadnoughts, you're hosed because you didn't keep up on the tech tree. You have to keep resources before point control.
And you've told me a number of times about matches that you played where everyone else was concentrating on ruckus in the middle or grabbing and holding VPs, and you were running around, you know, just taking and holding rec points and power, power, power.
Yeah, power. Power is advanced technology, a.k.a. power equals armor.
Sure. Power equals war gear. Power equals vehicles out the wazoo.
That's what I mean by armor.
Oh, yeah. No one calls it that.
I do.
Well, okay, you do.
So, okay. So, really, what it comes down to is play the friendly tutorial.
Noob.
Noob. I got hosed online. I cried because that's the kind of person I am.
You're very emotional. It's true.
Until I went and I read the manual, RTFM, and I played the tutorial. And then I played online against the computer. And finally I was like, oh, this is completely different. So if you're playing a new game, don't assume it's like every other game. Learn its specifics and you will succeed. And you will be the noob that we love to play.
And I will say, you know, this might not be the way you or I necessarily went about it, but there are, you learn different things from the different match types. If you play in 3v3, you get to watch other people play. You know, you have a much better chance of having someone else carry you along to a win that you could not have got on your own.
Absolutely.
That said, you will hone your play a lot more in 1v1. As long as you're not getting just completely stomped into the dirt and never figuring out what went wrong.
Speak to me not of the 1v1. I did really badly today.
Well, I'm sorry, but I really feel that you can, you know, I feel that I have learned, you know, in 1v1 matches that, you know, I can go back and look at the replays. You know, watch your replays.
Watch your replays.
Let's go to the tape.
Save your replays and watch them, especially when you're on a team with someone much more experienced and or you get schooled hard.
If you get schooled hard, watch the replay and go back and just watch what he does.
Exactly.
Watch his build order, watch where he runs, watch what he does with his first minute. Before he meets you, watch what he does when he's not fighting.
Watch how many groups he has. Watch, like, I've been killed by guys who are able to control, because I usually have two or three groups, and I've been killed by guys who have less units than me, but in different groups. So they're hitting me in more than one place.
Yeah,
and
some
I can't
guys
keep
are,
up.
Some guys are crazy about micro. We're just they are like
they're like professional South Korean StarCraft players on vacation.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I'm sure there are guys who are, you know, shift queuing up, you know, a whole bunch of caps and then going back and checking on their guy every couple seconds.
Shift. If you shift and right click, your units will do that stuff in order. Even gives you that tip in the game.
Yeah, if you read the manual, you'd know these things too. But you didn't, noob.
So, dear noob.
Dear noob.
And I have to give props to the noob last night who, in the loading screen, asked me not to drop when he saw how much higher in level I was, because he was a level 2 and I was a level 24.
This has probably happened to him.
We proceeded to win.
Yeah. You know, it's never over.
He was engaged. He was engaged and he was a teammate, team player.
Good noob.
Oh, here's my pettest peeve about Dawn of War 2.
You have a pettier peeve?
I have a pettier peeve. Douchebaggery. Okay? If you are playing 3v3 and someone on your team doesn't do exactly what you want them to do or what you would have done, and you proceed to abuse the person on your team, do you think that's going to get you anywhere? And then talk crap about the person on your team to the other team? I wish there was friendly fire, you douche!
Point six, noobs, don't be a douche.
And then you spew homophobic stuff at me?
Well, okay, look, I got...
Oh, you 16-year-old ballless scrotum!
Fire, you're on the internet. Welcome to it, like I introduced...
John Gabriel's Greater Internet Didwad Theory.
Yeah, no, it's funny because it's true. No, yeah, you're going to run into people who are not getting the experience they want for whatever reason. They wish they were on with their friend on that other team, perhaps. You know.
Oh no, Jared's kicking my ass!
Yeah, you know, their balls haven't dropped yet, and they don't know what to do with all that testosterone. They didn't get a date for prom. They suck. Whatever. They're unhappy with life, and you're in the way in a consequence-free-to-them environment. And that's just the way it is. And the internet is not a place for thin skins, sadly. So, you know,
the law of the land in that case is victory speaks for itself.
Exactly. The best revenge is winning the game. Because, you know, they can talk all they want. If they can't win, what do they got? It's a game. If you can't win that game, who cares about you?
Yeah. Alright, so we've talked a lot today about Dawn of War 2. It's really, really fun. Highly recommended it. The There Is Only War update is coming out. The beta just finished on that.
Yeah, the beta just finished, and I already uninstalled it, and it made me uninstall it again somehow, which was fascinating. I'm not sure what it spent that 20 minutes doing, but hey.
So, hopefully we'll have an update on the state of play and how we feel about the new balance in the There Is Only War update for Dawn of War 2. So that will be upcoming, and that's our gaming section for this week. Okay, so as any gamer sort of person knows, PAX...
Worth their salt knows,
PAX is coming up. That's the Penny Arcade Expo. It's a gamer convention in Seattle over Labor Day weekend.
That's correct.
And Sonic and I are going for the first time.
That's true. It's been going on for a few years now. Quite a few years, actually.
It's like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, and... You just, I am back and forth all day, and you just IM'd me like, so, when are we going to PAX? And I was like, did it happen yet? And you're like, no, I said, this year.
I took the time off with my boss to go to PAX in February.
Yeah.
I took it off 7 months early, so we're really looking forward to our epic journey.
Yeah, we're pretty committed. And, so our loyal fans and listeners can come visit us in our booth at PAX, which will be, the two of us wandering around the floor. It's a mobile booth. It involves our clothing and not much else.
Yeah, so I briefly considered, I'm not ashamed to say, I briefly considered engaging in high-level cosplay and making myself an Altair costume from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, someone is a big Assassin's Creed fan.
Oh, Altair in your sexy, sexy sway.
Yeah, she will actually just have him walk across Jerusalem and look at his butt.
Have you seen that butt?
I try not to.
Dude, you should look at that butt.
No, I really shouldn't.
Okay. Anyway, we shelved the fall cosplay idea, but given that Dawn of War 2 has kind of been the big thing for us this year...
You know, honestly, we've gotten closer as we've gotten older. You know, I'm pushing 30 now. We haven't had that many games that we both played. There was Mercenaries back in the day, Tony Hawk, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of the games that my mom played, like I said. But Dawn of War, and especially Dawn of War 2, which we were both really excited about right when it came out, we both got into it right away.
Yeah.
It's been kind of nice to have something in common like that.
And because of its the multiplayer and the online and how easy it is to replay it, we've been able to play it together, which is not something... You know, when you don't live together and you don't have two controllers, it's hard to play a game together. So...
Yeah, so it's been nice to have this thing. So the point being that Dawn of War has a certain prominent place in our lives, which sounds kind of sad when you say it that way. This video game has a prominent place in bringing us together as a family.
Okay, people talk about getting married because they went to a movie, so...
Okay, fine, fair enough. So anyway... We figured this was worth making a part of our PAX experience.
So we are making theme shirts.
A very minor part of our PAX experience, you know, but you are a crafty person.
I am crafty.
You do make a fair amount of clothing. You make money making clothing.
I have done that.
And so, you know, this is a reasonably low-risk, high-chance-of-completion project.
Exactly.
Which you can drag me through, like, the tailoring noob that I am.
Yay, noob!
And so, yeah, theme shirts.
Theme shirts.
And Warhammer 40K theme shirts, which is not something that you just see that much of.
No. So I am going to put together a Space Wolves themed t-shirt.
And I'm going with orcs.
You're at orcs. I believe you're the Speed Freak cult?
Evil Sons.
Evil Sun. But they're yellow.
No, that's bad news.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Evil Sons are red.
But you gotta remember, uh-huh. Red makes it go faster.
The red ones go faster. So I'm making a fast shirt.
What kind of message are you trying to send with that?
Well, you know, was it Bonnaroo that's gonna be in town? Bumper Shoot.
Bumper Shoot.
There's gonna be all those indie girls in town.
Lots of indie girls with fake colored hair. So mine is going to be Space Wolf because I'm really, really, really into Liam and Russ right now.
Yeah,
God, that sounds so sad.
You've always been into Vikings anyway.
They're Viking Space Marines. You cannot fight this combination.
Space Vikings.
Space Vikings. So if you are at PAX and you see two similarly heighted, vaguely same-eyed people wearing Warhammer 40K theme shirts that look kind of crappily homemade.
Extremely crappily, highly homemade. This is some refined lamitude.
We will provide the prize of complete astonishment if anyone walks up and says, "Oh my god, are you Sonic and Fire?"
Yeah.
Can I have your autograph?
I don't have an autograph.
I have an autograph.
Oh, well, so you can do mine? Can you do two?
I don't have Fire, though. I have my real name.
Well, don't do that.
I'm not going to do that.
No.
Not that anyone could read it, but still, I'm not going to do that. You should work. We should work on that.
Yeah, I'm going to make stickers.
My goal for PAX is to meet Tycho.
That shouldn't be that hard. We're sitting in the Tycho section.
Yes! Yeah, we got in the Bring Your Own Computer section. We are front row in the Tycho section.
Front row center.
We have dork cred.
Yeah, which means I assume that if he starts some sort of Bring Your Own Computer concert, we'll be in the Bring Your Own Computer mosh pit.
My computer was expensive, and I want to protect it from all moshing and jostling.
It's going to be nerdy moshing, so no one will move. We'll just turn colors.
Okay.
Pale, minty.
I have a feeling that I'm going to accidentally break some sort of pale dork boy at this convention.
Just don't touch one.
I'm going to try, but I'm like a bull in a china shop, man. I'm going to be trying to talk about, like, triathlons and open water swimming and how I went to track practice, and then I'm going to accidentally brush someone with my elbow, and he's going to scream, and his spleen's going to explode.
You're in the weird position of being a nerdy jock.
I am a nerdy jock.
You are, and I'm just a nerdy nerd.
Does that make me, like, a doc? I'm a dork jock?
You're some kind of a knock.
I'm a weird hybrid.
Well, you know,
Revenge of the Nerds just didn't explain me.
It did. But, you know, there are actually, you know, a reasonable number of your kin these days, thanks to things like Madden NFL, colleges, the rise of the sort of very common video game console.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
In the college campus.
But I don't really consider, like, your average frat boy who just happens to have a PlayStation as someone who would come to PAX.
You don't think?
I view people who come to PAX as people with kind of a commitment to gaming and sort of gaming mentality.
Well,
and
they're committed enough to spend $50 plus getting there, so that's something.
Yeah, no, I mean, if they come, I just don't think they'll come.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean how many frat boys, in the typical American frat boy sense, are going to sign up to see Will Wheaton talk about something?
Okay, granted, probably not that many.
You know, so, although if I do see Will Wheaton, I'm going to be juiced and talk about the time my friend saw him humping at a tree at a Ren Fair, so.
I want to see Jonathan Colton.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, right? Jonathan Colton, MC Frontalot, and
I don't know, we haven't put that that much else on the schedule.
Yeah, we want to catch a couple keynotes, a couple of concerts.
A lot of BYOC.
A lot of BYOC, hit the vendor floor.
Yeah, I plan to buy some kind of stuff.
I've signed up to be an Omeganaut.
I have not. I'm going to be your corner man.
Oh my god, if I get to be an Omeganaut, even if they knock me out in the first round, I'm playing that they give us Rock Band, and then I can sing, because I can do that. I can't play the instruments for anything, because I don't have one.
It'll be Rock Band, and you'll have to play the drums. Yeah, because no one else will.
No one else will want to sing.
You don't think? No.
I don't think so.
You think the PAX crowd at playing Rock Band is all guitar all the time?
Guitar and bass, man.
Yeah.
And I think here's my ideal situation: is I get picked and I get to sing in Rock Band and I get to do Rage Against the Machine.
That sounds good.
And I want like 5,000 geeks just screaming out "Fuck you! I won't do what you tell me."
You, Kate.
As I said, pipe dream.
Yeah, I think that the pipe is the only place that dream's gonna. So, do you want to talk a little bit about the shirt that you're making?
The shirt I'm making is Space Wolves colors, according to Dawn of War 2, are a grayish blue with bright yellow pauldrons. That's the shoulder bits for those of you out there who don't know armor.
I don't. I think they're
bright yellow shoulders. on one shoulder is a howling wolf insignia. On the other, I believe it's either red or it's yellow with the company insignia. And then on the chest is the Imperial Eagle. And so that's what I'm going for. It's going to have yellow shoulders on a blue-gray t-shirt. Around the neck, it's going to say For Russ and the Allfather, which is the battle cry of the Space Wolves. And somewhere on it, I want to write Abaddon Can Suck It, quote Lehman Russ. And I'm going to try and maybe put Terminator honors on it. And
well, that would go on one of your pauldrons, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, maybe over there. And then also possibly some little, the you know, the little seals, purity seals
yeah.
you get as
those
extras in the campaign in Dawn of War 2.
Yeah, they're warrior.
So that's what I want. And then possibly even this quote I really love from Lehman Russ about, it's really badass.
Can you do the Latin?
Can you do the Latin? Per cur et laboro pugnaculum constructum est, per cur et laboro tantum is captus est.
Oh!
Snap! That's like a triple geek score right there.
Anybody who sends me the translation wins a prize.
Run that through Babelfish and suck it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And tell me about your shirt, Rob.
Well, I'm
Oh, sorry. Sonic Rob!
Yeah, that's
you are Rob.
My name is Rob. My other name, my handle is also Rob. So that makes it easy. Anyway. Yeah, the orc shirt, going with a red base, you know, the red ones do go fast, although we were just actually at the thrift store today and found a very nice shirt in sort of a rusty dry blood. Instead of the sort of vivid red that orcs tend to favor. I was hoping to dress it up with a sort of strip of black and white checks down
racing stripe
where the buttons go, just because it's kind of an orcish motif. You saw it a lot on the old earlier editions. They had another tribe called the Goths. I don't know if they're still around, but they do a lot of checks, and I think checks and red look good together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no love there. Maybe we'll find something else at some point to do with that. But then I also got another shirt in a very nice sort of faded, battle-worn kind of green.
Jungle green.
Very orky kind of colors with this sort of rust red and faded green. And I'm figuring, yeah, just put a nice big bog on the back. You know, I don't know if the whole splattering blood idea on a red shirt's going to work out that well, but, you know, I also liked your husband's idea of putting on a, you know, like Daka Daka or Mordaka or something
yeah.
like that. Some kind of orc.
Check out me flash, boss.
Because I do really like sleeve motifs, especially if you're going to do a, you know, a really fancy shirt. Like a,
it's really
like,
close to elite motif. Anyway, go on.
But no, that's more or less the whole of it. I'm trying to do something that I might conceivably finish. So, you know, trying to you know, aim low and achieve. And, you know, maybe we'll go super fancy for... the shirt that I wear for next Comic-Con or something. I don't know.
So there's going to be a fair amount of... We just bought shirts that we're going to hack. So like I'm going to cut the sleeves off of one yellow
t-shirt. Yeah, we're going to be shirt hacking.
And then put them...
There's less code, but more scissors.
It's actual hacking.
Chopping.
Chopper. More slackers.
Use your choppers, you gits.
Anyway.
Dork.
So I'm going to be cutting the sleeves off one t-shirt. Another t-shirt, and then there's going to be, I was thinking for Rob's shirt, for the wall on the back, actually doing reverse applique, which I think would look super badass.
I think I might also put some highlight color, like stripes down the middles of the tops of the sleeves and shoulders.
There's also going to be some Sharpie work, which is a time-honored tradition, possibly some bleach pen work.
Yeah, and we'll have photos of all this up on the site.
Yeah, so we're gonna have in-process sort of beginning and after-process photos of our t-shirts in case, you know, you want to be like us.
Yeah, awesome.
So that's the fashion report for PAX.
Ooh la la.
Ooh.
So this is the section of the podcast where I get my hate on for the Harry Potter film franchise.
Now, you don't have any hate for the books.
No.
Quite the opposite.
Book 7 was... I felt the wrong time for J.K. Rowling to be stretching artistically, but it was okay.
That's true. There could have maybe that would have been to just finish out the arc in a consistent manner and then move on to trying new things.
Yeah, but anyway, I have no problem with the books. The books were great. The first two films were unremarkable. They were
adapted from the books.
Yeah, they were not actually adapted from the books. They were more like translated. It was more like. There was no attempt to sort of adapt the material to a different medium.
Well, they used cameras.
Well, they used cameras. The third movie, Azkaban, directed by Alfonso Cuarón, fantastic movie, first. Yeah, it was like the book, it had plot similarities, but he made a good movie. It was exciting, it was fun, it was funny.
There was Gary Oldman.
There was Gary Oldman, and he got the point of the book, which is about becoming a teenager.
It's creepy.
He understood the spirit of the journey the characters were going on. The fourth movie was okay. Goblet of Fire was okay. It was still better than the first two. It wasn't as good as the third one.
They had to chop that book down a lot to fit into the 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
it was by far the longest book to that point.
Yeah, but it was still pretty good. The fifth movie, Order of the Phoenix.
Oh my.
The man who directed Order of the Phoenix is directing, directed Order of the Phoenix, has directed Half-Blood Prince, and will be directing in two films, Deathly Hallows. This dude is a hack, okay? This dude does not get it. In my opinion.
Do you have a name?
I don't even know this dude's name. I hate him so much.
Wow, okay.
So, here's what galls me. At the end of Order of the Phoenix, in the big fight, spoilers, in the big fight between Voldemort and Dumbledore in the Ministry of Magic, it's like this guy missed every single important point the book had.
Well, the thing that kills me about magic fights in this series, they did it in the fourth movie, which I actually watched last night, is that the way Rowling writes them, they're so inventive, they're so creative, you know, it's the sort of battle of imaginations, you know, I'll come up with this, and I'll counter with that, and I'll do this, and I'll throw with that, and I'll twist it with that, and then in the movies, all you ever seem to get is two people pointing their wands at each other, and, you know, Ghostbusters beams come out, and whoever, like, grunts hardest wins.
That's,
it's like Dragon Ball.
Oh, it's terrible, and, you know, in the books they talk about, you know, you have to master a particular motion with each spell, you know, the swish and flick. Right? That if you don't wave the wand the right way, it doesn't work. And yet, in the movies, all they ever seem to do is go whack. They just kind of point it, and they turn the wands into guns. And
or bullwhips.
Or, you know, whatever. And so, the fight at the end of Goblet of Fire is very much as he describes it. These two spells hit each other, and then they're tied together by the energy.
Sure.
The fight at the end of Order of the Phoenix is very different.
Sure, it is.
And yet, somehow, they managed to film them being exactly the same.
They're nigh identical.
They're identical. And then the other thing at the end of Order of the Phoenix that really impressed me from the book is the idea that Voldemort is fighting. He's fighting for his life. He's into it. And Dumbledore's walking around like he's having a cup of tea.
Do-do.
He's literally going do-do-do. And it's like, oh, whatever. Oh, whatever. Oh, whatever. Like, and part of his victory, part of his psychological victory over Voldemort is the fact that he can look like it. He doesn't care. Like,
That is part of Dumbledore's shtick. He's got a thing that he does, and that's part of his fighting technique, is to project this very sort of absent-minded, befuddled old person. But he's really very sharp.
Exactly. And then the other point that really got me is that besides the, oh, no, he's dead, slow-mo, no sound, oh, God, is the idea that Harry somehow fights Voldemort off when Voldemort possesses him. But the point that the book makes is that Voldemort and Harry, that Harry is antithetical to Voldemort. That the fact that he knows love, that anyone has ever loved him and that he's ever felt it, is inimical to Voldemort. Voldemort cannot exist where love is. Hate cannot be where love is. That's the theoretical point of the book. Harry doesn't fight him off. Harry can't fight him off. Voldemort is killing him. And he just can't do it. And the fact that they have Harry fight him off and, you know, do all this stuff.
It's a lot more actualized. But it's the lazy answer. It takes less explaining.
The lazy answer took less explaining. And I feel that they really lost something. They lost a spirit of the book there.
Well, that's kind of one of the risks in adaptation, though. This question of what you put in, what you leave out. You know, there's a lot in books. You know, in books, everything is tell, don't show. You can't show. All you can do is tell.
Yeah.
You know, in various ways. But, you know, you can have someone think, and he did this because of so-and-so, or have someone say, and he felt this and ran, you know, or something like that. And in the movie, you have to either show that or take even more time to tell it.
Yeah. And another thing, as I sip my ice-cold glass of Haterade, is in the book, in the end of Order of the Phoenix, I was scared. Because she'd already killed Cedric Diggory. She'd already shown that she was not afraid to kill people.
Well, and they'd already publicized the fact that
somebody dies. And it's as they're sitting there, and there's that scene where Ron is sitting, and he's fallen against the wall, and he's deathly pale with blood coming out of his mouth, uncontrollably laughing. Scared the hell out of me.
And the brain attack.
The brain attack. And so many things that... There's no suspense there. I felt suspense in the book, and you could have done it in the movie, but they didn't. They didn't even try. I think that the most successful adaptations from one medium to another are those that keep the spirit and intention of the work.
But change enough to keep you on your toes.
Well, not necessarily change, but aren't so slavishly adherent to the plot and events of the source medium. Like,
well, that's a very fine line to walk, because at some point people are going to go, that's not the same story anymore.
Well, that's the thing, is if it's something like Harry Potter or, say, Twilight, where it has to do these things because it's such a well-known piece of work, you're in a bind as
right,
a director.
People are seriously in a bind. People are coming to the film to see this story.
Yeah, and so you have to do a certain amount of fan service.
That's not fan service. That's the story.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm talking about, like, an adaptation of something like Harry Potter is in a different league than an adaptation of something that's less well-known. The finest book-to-movie adaptation I've ever seen is Children of Men by Alfonso Cuarón. Cuarón fanboy moment.
Finest one I've ever seen is Fear and Loathing.
Another excellent one, because it captures the spirit of the book.
It's also got a number of, you know, line-for-line readings out of the book.
It's also really... Because I think
Fear
and Loathing is really, really good as a movie because it's such a psychedelic freaking trip of a book.
That, okay, I can see that.
You know, the overwhelming feeling of that book is weird. Is off-kilter, which is kind of the point. I hated that movie until it was explained to me what the point of the movie was, and
right.
Then I totally got it, and now it makes me kind of sad.
That's kind of... Too bad that the movie didn't do well enough to get the point across to you on its own.
Well, I wasn't as educated a viewer then. Like, after a few viewings, I started to get it.
Yeah, so it's all about the wave speech.
Yeah, it's absolutely the high watermark. So, anyway, that's my hate. Harry Potter films just hurt my soul at this point. Like, I go back and I watch...
It's been a sort of descending slope.
Oh, it's hard.
Oh,
like
it's been bumpy. It's been bumpy, right?
After 5, after Phoenix, I came out of that theater mad.
Yeah.
I was upset.
We came out pretty disappointed, too. I wouldn't go further than this.
So, but here's my key. Here's what I do. I have been to see all of the X-Men movies.
Yes, you have.
But I have very, very clear expectations. I want to see Hugh Jackman run around in a white beard. And go, wah. And I go, and I pay my whatever, and I get to see Hugh Jackman run around being angry in a white beater. I got what I paid for. So when I go to see Harry Potter 6, because I will inevitably go to see Harry Potter 6.
But you haven't.
But
it's
I haven't.
Been out for, what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah. I'm going to set my expectations exceedingly low.
Well, you know, there's one could argue that you are, you know, That's sort of the soft bigotry of low expectations right there. You know, they're not going to make the movies any better if you don't demand any better. But I would...
My voice is a small and lonely one in the wilderness of consumer America.
You're one pebble in an avalanche.
Where are the other pebbles?
Right.
I don't see you resisting. You
well,
already went.
I gotta tell you, I haven't read the 6th book in 3 or 4 years.
Doesn't matter!
It does, because I don't remember it very well, and so I couldn't be upset by how the movie wasn't like it.
That is a very good point.
It worked out great for me.
Okay, so the key is don't go read the book before you go see the movie.
At the very least, don't go seeing the movie hoping for the vision that you saw in your head when you read the book.
The only thing I want, spoiler, from this movie is I want the perfect look between Dumbledore and Snape right before Snape kills him.
I will say nothing.
It has to be the exact right, so that if you don't know,
well,
it's right, and if you do know, it's right.
There's that very important line, Severus, please.
That has to be said perfectly.
Well, you need to put your faith in Michael Gambon.
Because he's the man, although I do... The movie posters? Dude, who could not prefer Harris? When Harris died, I said the only person who could replace him is O'Toole, but O'Toole looks too old. Anyway.
Old.
Old Tool. In the posters on the buses, they made Michael Gambon look exactly like Ian McKellen. What is that? He looks like Gandalf!
Ian McKellen is our old British wizard in America. We have no other. There shall be no other old British wizard.
My countrymen, broaden your minds!
And your movie expectations.
Okay. So, I'm gonna go see Harry Potter 6. My expectations are low. I put my faith in Michael Gambon and Alan Rickman, who's not only a hot piece of ass, but a fine, fine actor.
He has come to look more and more like he was just baked out of soft white bread. I find he's
You mean Snape or Rickman?
Rickman as portraying Snape. He is white and puffy and dewy and looks like you could leave a finger sort of dent in him, and then there's that sort of hair. Although they washed his hair for this, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not so the greasy Trent Reznor thing is not so much.
And I guess I should ask, but is there going to be the flashback with Lily? Or is that from the next movie?
We don't know.
The whole beginning part where he tells off Lily Potter?
Oh, no, that's not it.
Okay. Anyway, we've gone on long enough. That's your hate for this week. I am your hater of the week, Fire. We've been watching a lot of telly lately. A lot of cable television, most notably Showtime and HBO.
I have neither an antenna nor a cable connection, but cable television...
It's DVDs, people.
It is.
DVDs.
Netflix.
Thank you, Sony. And Netflix. And my friend Jill. So, first off, I watched the entire first series of True Blood.
I did too.
And I have to say, I love trashy, and my lord, does this bring the trashy.
Yeah, it's a lurid program, by any measure.
Any program where someone in all seriousness puts on a diaphanous white nightgown and runs through the night across the cemetery to her vampire lover's house?
To lose two kinds of virginity at once?
Oh! But at the same time, the delicious, mindless trashiness of this show,
It's distilled, crystallized sass.
Oh, man. It's funny.
It is.
It's got hot sex.
There's a lot of that.
There's a mystery.
There is.
And
there's a good season-long mystery in it, which is
nice. Yeah, it's nice. It has a whole season-long arc that takes you right to the end.
They end every episode with a cliffhanger. It's like Dan Brown is writing or something.
So, I would say True Blood, if you like trashy. Now, my man partner does not like trashy. He's not into trashy. I don't think he's going to like True Blood.
He's into classy.
He's into cheesy. He likes classy and cheesy, but he doesn't like trashy. I am not embarrassed to admit I like romance novels. I chew them up.
It's true. You're not a proud person.
They're brainless. I don't have to think. I also read every novel that wins the Pulitzer Prize, so sue me.
It's true that the True Blood does not demand a lot of thinking. If you want to interpret the performances and go, oh, Anna Paquin is conveying this the conflict that she feels over such and such tragedy, which we won't really go into. She does a good job of emoting and all that. Congratulations on your Golden Globe, etc., etc. But you can just sort of sit there and let it wash over you and not really miss out.
Yeah, it's something that you're going to take from it what you put into it. There was a scene about a third of the way through the first season that pretty much had me weeping. Mainly because
personal.
It echoed a part of my personal life, and I was also in a very bad personal place. But it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to see media that reflects your life.
I guess. And it's... They didn't let... That was actually the same episode with the diaphanous gown running. So they don't keep it on the serious tip for that terribly long.
Yeah, they take you down, and they make you cry, and then they make you laugh and stare at some beautiful man's ass, which is not a problem. You like trashy? If you're into vampires, you've already seen it, and I don't need to tell you. It's good. Check it out. And get back to me. Bill or Eric? Okay.
Or Angel.
Angel's not even in the show.
Yeah, but I really feel that there's a certain,
No, this is a True Blood only poll.
Okay.
Bill or Eric? How much brood versus how much arrogant? Mm-hmm. You know, do you like hot, brood, what is it?
Brood. is going to abstain from all of those polls.
Abstainer!
I'm just not into poll.
I would like to say that Sonic Rob, a filthy abstainer.
I would like to say that Sonic Rob, not a big poll fan.
What, you don't like to smoke the poll?
I don't smoke the pole, I don't ride the pole, I don't dance on the pole, I don't swing from the pole.
There you've had it, people. Sonic Rob is not an exotic dancer.
I'm not, that's true. If anyone who thinks they saw me dancing in an exotic manner...
That was his cousin!
That was someone else who looked like me.
In a gay bar.
Hey now!
A good gay bar. Classy gay bar.
Alright then.
Anyway, so our next... DVD recommendation is Dexter from Showtime.
All of Dexter.
All
there's
of Dexter.
Plenty, there's a plenty of it, but not enough.
They've just started season 3 or season 4.
Season 3's done.
Is
it airing again now?
I don't know. Because I only watch it on Netflix. Yeah. I just started watching Dexter.
We'll ride your pole.
Sonic Rob will ride your pole, contrary to his previous assurances that he would not. Dexter creeped me out and yet entertained the hell out of me.
Mission accomplished then. Quick summary. It's sort of the first person story of a reasonably charming sociopathic, psychopathic serial killer. What is the brilliance of this show? Is it the incredibly black humor in it? I mean, he really is just sort of standing on the outside looking in, and he can be very sort of witty about it.
You know, well, obviously the story of the whole thing is Dexter's journey to humanity.
I don't know. I think that's...
I'm gonna caveat myself and say I haven't finished the first season yet, so don't give too much credence to whatever I say.
Okay, listen to me then, because I've seen all three.
Okay.
Is it
Dishonic?
Yeah, see, the point of the show, I don't think, is anything about a journey to humanity. This is not a show about redemption. It's more a show about... tension, and how you deal with tension, but how Dexter deals with tension, because he does have murderous impulses, which he slakes in a, sort of a hopefully helpful way to society, as taught by his dad, but it's also with the tension that you feel. He's always just one step ahead of the law, mostly because he's a force for the police.
Yeah.
All of his friends are police who are trying to catch him, and they don't know it, and so the whole thing is very sort of, I want to say twisted, or, there's a perverse impishness to this idea of working with the people who are trying to catch you, and he's often just slipping in a bit of the evidence that will point to towards some other criminal that he's already killed, and can easily bear the load of that guilt, in people's minds.
I think the intriguing thing about Dexter is that it's so easy to identify with him. I mean, you want to feel conflicted because the guy is like gets hot looking at severed corpses, but at the same time, there's something magnetic about him. I don't know.
He's charismatic, and he's presenting the story, so he's telling it to you for whatever reason. You can think of it as like some kind of interview with a vampire kind of thing, or just that's how the story happens.
Yeah,
but it's not really explained why it's in the first person analysis. It's not really important. But he wants you to at least understand. He's attempting to explain himself. And that can lead to a sense of connection. He's the only person whose head you really get inside the show. Partly because he can't tell you what other people are thinking, because he has no sense of empathy. He's an emotional cripple. He's a sociopath.
Yeah.
So, you don't really have anyone else to sort of hang your sort of emotional hat on. You have to identify with Dexter, or the show is going to be avoided to you.
Yeah.
There are plenty of characters on the show who have breadth and who develop during the course of it. His sister gets a lot of development through the various series. So it's not like Dexter is the only interesting person on the show or anything like that.
He's just the most interesting person
on the
show.
He is certainly the most interesting person, and he's the protagonist. He's the one who's solving every season has, again, a mystery to it that will be wrapped up by the end. Spoilers. Hopefully not too bad spoilers.
Don't spoil me!
And, you know, he's the one who's pursuing that. He's also just sort of, really the first season is the best one as far as the very funny sort of interviews that he carries on with his victims.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen the one where he's got a hold of a husband and wife who are importing illegal aliens. That one's, he's a great chit-chat with them for a while.
I just finished the one with his first kill.
Oh, with the Lieutenant Yar. Wow, she's looking kind of old these days.
Damn!
Well,
it's
been a few years.
Yeah. Here we are, dorking ourselves out by referring to Denise Crosby as her Star Trek The Next Generation character name. So, thank you for listening to,
whatever it is.
Whatever, we don't...
animal product. What
animal by product.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for listening to Sonic and Fire talk about crap.
Yeah.
And we'll get at you next time, and feel free to leave comments.
Later.